In part one of our Fillmore Unified episode, I said that a theme had emerged as we were editing. That theme was knowledge, and we wrapped up the episode talking about the difference between knowledge and understanding. That we tend to confuse the two things as the same, but the fact is that our knowledge, which is old, can be a block to our understanding something in the moment, which is new. The old obscuring our ability to experience the new. For part two of Fillmore, a theme has also emerged. The theme of meaning. In my experience, people don't give much thinking to meaning. But meaning plays a much larger and expansive role in driving our lives than I think we give it credit for. Sure, we talk a lot about how our lives have to have meaning. We say this person or thing has meaning to me. Some of us may use the word purpose instead of meaning. Some who like to read business books might call it the why. But meaning is always present in our lives. And I would argue that literally everything is meaning. What do I mean? Now, full disclosure, I could spend multiple podcasts, hours really, going deep into meaning. But for the sake of this being a cold open, we're going to try to keep it brief. Plant the seed of meaning and how it works. So, meaning unfolds energy. What something means to us determines the level of energy and type or quality of energy we give to it. If something means something to us, it's easy to give it energy. Synonyms for energy here could be passion, attention, focus, care. If something doesn't mean something to us, it's very hard to give it energy. Or if it should mean something to us and it doesn't, we may give it the wrong energy. For example, if a person has significant meaning to us, meaning that we say that we love them, it's very easy for us to give our energy to them. We can do it almost without thinking, sometimes to our own detriment. But if something like exercise has no meaning to us, or the wrong meaning, it's very hard to get up and do it. We might say things like, I have to force myself to do this. So meaning is also the underpinning of intention. Most of the time, we're not aware of our intentions until after we're forced to reflect on our actions. We might say, that's not what I intended. But that intention unfolded from a deeper meaning, a meaning we have about the person or thing we are interacting with. And if we want to change our intention towards something, we're going to have to examine its meaning to us. We create meaning. Us, you and I, give meaning to almost everything in our lives that we interact with on a daily basis. We create meaning, then teach it to others, and then that unfolds energy in us and affects our intentions and our belief in ourselves and in others. But if we create meaning, it also means we can change it. We have the crazy ability to make anything mean anything we want it to mean, which also means we can change the energy we give to literally anything by just changing its meaning. It's honestly pretty crazy when what I'm trying to share starts to click. But I'm going to stop here for now. And as you listen today to what the teachers and admin and the students of Fillmore have to say, consider how they are talking about meaning. And how, when they become aware of it, then ask whether its meaning is coherent, then ask themselves, wait, does that meaning make any sense? How that then changes the energy and intentions of everyone. Welcome to Rising from the Margins, Episode 6, Chapter 4, Part 2, Fillmore Unified in Fillmore, California.
The work that we're doing is not optional. This is where we're going. Our charge here is to elevate outcomes. Why do schools exist? Prove outcomes for kids.
Now, I'm not going to assume here what Christine means when she says, we want to improve student outcomes. But when she says it, it makes me wonder about our collective meaning of improving student outcomes. In the world of California education systems, does it mean that merely we improve our California state test scores? And that this is the sole thing we value and what determines our worth as a school? Or does the phrase improving student outcomes mean that we're improving a child's outcome in all areas of their life? We have to understand not everything can be put into a colorful pie chart. It's something that's felt and seen, something we are moved by. It's meaning, and one can feel the change in energy that begins to unfold. It's a meaning much more than just the score on the dashboard.
I like to say quite a bit there's a difference between having high expectations and having high standards.
Keith Derrick, Fillmore High's principal.
So a high standard is I set a goal and you gotta just jump over that hoop, right? If you don't get there, well, you just didn't meet it. But a high expectation says something quite different. It says, I expect you to meet this. And when I expect you to meet this, I'm going to provide you supports to actually meet that.
So with a set of expectations on how they as a team question their systems, Fillmore has started asking other deeper and subtler questions, questions that start to challenge long-standing ideas in education. One of those questions, what is teaching versus learning?
Focus on learning.
It's not about teaching, it's about learning.
Putting the efforts in student learning versus teaching.
We're focusing on the learning, not the teaching.
Yes.
There's something that you're saying right there that's really interesting that I'm realizing is subtle that I didn't necessarily connect before until right now. And the insight I'm having is the notion of focusing prior on the teaching seems to fall under this idea of like, I taught the shit out of it. Like I taught it really well. And if you didn't get it and then you don't pass the test, well, it's on your own time to take it, or I'm giving the test. And if you're not ready, you're not ready. That then to me says, okay, that's a culture that's focusing on teaching.
Mm-hmm.
To shift that from teaching to learning would mean what we're saying here, which is, it's not about whether you got it right or wrong on this CFA. The CFA is to actually inform all of us, yourself included, whether you understood it. If you didn't, well, then it just means you didn't understand it. So we'll reapproach it and see a better way to get there. And then once you get it, then you can be confident that like, oh, okay, I got that skill and I can move on to the next.
Yeah.
That's subtle, but like pretty profound.
Because it's not about a score in a grade book anymore.
This is the voice of Fillmore Middle School's 8th grade teacher, Ashley McLean.
It's not, oh, hey, I taught you this. You need to take this CFA. I'm going to put your score in. And even in the grade book, it's, okay, maybe I put that score in, but I put a note right next to it, next to everybody's, that says, first attempt.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Plain and simple. It's your first attempt. And the moment you feel confident that you're ready to retake it, when it's time that I'm giving the second retake, or we've gotten into groups, we've worked through something, we've done a lab, and it's time for a second attempt, well, if you were proficient the first time, you're not going to take a second attempt. You don't need to. But you get to feel confident and go in a second time.
And here's Rachel Reich of Fillmore Middle School's 7th grade.
I feel like it has built the relationship with my students because it's saying, like, we are taking the time. We want you to succeed. Here's another chance versus back in my day. It was, oh, you want to retake it? Come by at lunch or after school or before school and you make the time. Or in order to retake the test, you need to do XYZ. You need to do this packet or whatever. And it was just so many hoops to jump through. And the onus was on the student to take that time. Versus here, it's like, you have to retake it. You didn't show proficiency. You have to retake it. And also, I'm going to give you the tools to help you reach proficiency beforehand.
Just because you teach it a certain way means you're going to get across to a room of 36 kids. Just because I'm doing it the right way and I'm talking to them and we're doing labs, and it doesn't mean everybody's going to get it. It's really nice for the students to be able to get the extra one-on-one support. It's not their fault they didn't get it. They're 13, 14. Like, I'm the person who's supposed to help them understand it. So if they don't get it, what can I change? And so just because you've done something the same way forever doesn't mean you should keep doing it. We've had that conversation on our side a lot.
Yes.
We've always done it this way. Or that conversation comes up, whatever it is. And we've had to ask multiple times on our site, just because we've always done it that way, is it working? Like, are we getting the results we want because we've done it that way? Maybe we should change it.
The thing that comes immediately to my mind is the grading policy.
Yeah.
And one really sticky issue was zeros. And we're saying on practice assignments, and not necessarily assessments, hopefully we get there, is that there is no zero. is that 50% is the floor that you can get if you don't do any work or don't show anything, because that's still an F. But if you have a zero, that just, it's so hard to dig out from that. To get from an F to a D is what?
60 points
versus everything else is a 10-point margin. So it was very illuminating in our conversation and hearing that, well, why should I give a student 50% if they didn't do anything? It's still an F. And so just hearing the conversations, and hopefully maybe for some of those teachers, hearing them say it themselves, saying, oh, like, what is the purpose of this score I'm giving them? Is it to show that they're not understanding? Is it to punish them? Those are interesting conversations.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
Right? It's all the same thing. An F is an F, no matter what the score is. So why aren't we trying to dig it out and help the kids not get stuck? That's where we've found when we get these kids that are so far behind, or they get those zeros, and then it comes time to get ready for promotion, right? Eighth grade promotion. We can't have an F. But then we have kids who are so far behind that they can never, ever get there. They see it. They see the numbers. Oh, that's a 22%. Never going to do it. And they give up. And you can't get them back once they've given up.
Meaning. The meaning of a zero. Is the meaning merely for us to punish? Every other grade spans 10 points, but an F spans 50. Does that really make sense? And if it doesn't, can we be approaching it a different way? The teachers are saying here, this meaning of a zero, or of a much lower F, unfolds an energy in a student, a belief that they can't overcome that huge gap. It's defeating. I'll never make it back. So what's the point in even trying? Meaning, unfolding energy. And when we as teachers give a kid a zero, is this also not creating a meaning in us about them? An idea in us about how they don't care about school. All this meaning becomes our knowledge of them, and then it becomes harder to understand them. Isn't knowledge and understanding not just a synonym here for teaching and learning? To teach, I have to have knowledge. The knowledge makes me an authority. But if I want to inspire you, if I want to create meaning between you and I, create meaning in a student about what an education really means, I have to understand. I have to understand you, my own knowledge of you, my personally defined meaning of you, becomes a block or barrier to me understanding you.
Before I got here, only like 30 to 50% of our kids were in grade level math in ninth grade. Meaning, in a traditional sense, you take Algebra 1 in the ninth grade, that means anything below. Like, kids, we had a remediation course.
Remediation, a noun. The correction of something bad or defective.
One of the big things we did is we got rid of remediation classes.
In education, remediation means teaching again, and for students in a quote-unquote remediation class, this can create significant meaning on one's self-esteem, attitude, and their general outlook on school.
Well, the first blush is teachers are going to say, or people are going to say, oh, well, now the kids are going to be in way over their head, and they're all going to fail, right? Well, funny thing, now we have 92% of our kids this year in at least Algebra 1 or higher. We do integrated, so Math 1 or higher. So we've gone from like 30 to 92 in a year. And guess what? Grades got actually better. I mean, how do you expect kids to learn grade level material if they're not in grade level? Duh. It's not rocket science.
What the IAM model and a real PLC process allows a school to do is continually keep asking questions of themselves. And the more you ask good questions, the more you start uncovering meanings that don't make sense anymore.
And when you talk about tradition, you know, the traditional kind of school is, well, I've set a line that you got to jump over. And you just didn't get there. Sorry, get tutoring yourself or figure it out or come to after school. But when you have high expectations, you say, here it is. Here's the standard. This is where we want you to get. But now we're supporting you to get there because we expect you to get there because we're teachers and all kids can learn in this school. And we have a system in place to rise you up to meet that standard. So when you start doing that in schools, shoot, student achievement goes out the roof. So you get rid of the remediation, you put in high expectations, which means you have to support kids.
To help students meet those expectations, Fillmore Unified has created interventions that are quite extraordinary for each school site. Here's Fillmore Superintendent Christine Shefferly.
This past year, all of our schools have built-in intervention or acceleration time within the school day. Because what we found and what we know is that those students who need that extra time to learn, they may not be able to stay after school or come in early before school. There's family commitments, and as the kids get older in high school, there's work commitments.
I spoke with four Fillmore High students who shared candidly about their experience, how this dedicated time during school hours, what Fillmore High calls flash forward, was allowing them the space to catch up or advance in their studies.
I would go to work after school, and it was in Oxnard, and I would have to drive all the way over there and then come back, and it would be already like 10:30. And I'm just like, oh my God, I don't want to feel like I need a rest. Like my whole day has been so bombarded with a bunch of stuff.
There were commitments across the schools. At the elementary schools, all of their schedules have, some call it win time, what I need time, universal access time, where there's that opportunity for relearning. Our middle school and high school, which I think is unique to secondary schools, have, we call it club academy, or we went to block schedules, where that additional 20 minutes of every period is spent to a reteaching, a relearning of essential standards.
When the kids take that assessment in class on that essential standard, if they didn't do so well, now if it's English 9, our teachers are setting up, well, all the kids that didn't do well on this standard, you can go to, these three teachers who are going to reteach it to you during the school day. And then we can retest you and we can move forward.
With that time that I get from Flash Forward, I was able to go to my math teachers and kind of get a sense of, hey, I'm not really getting this. Can you help me? And they would definitely help with that. They would. I know friends, not only myself, but friends have been like, oh yeah, I enrolled to one of the math teachers, Flash Forward, and I'm getting much better sense of what's happening now. Like, I'm getting twice as much help, which is definitely needed, because sometimes those an hour and 45 minutes is not enough.
Here's the voice of Guiding Coalition member Jeremy McMahon of Fillmore High's IT, Computer Science, and CT department.
They're seeing results where, student grades are coming up, students who miss things can make up things, students who didn't understand things are now understanding things.
I've seen numbers gone higher, like people are doing so much better in math or English because of this new schedule change.
So we're having a huge cultural shift in the sense of, like, how do we help students outside the classroom? Oh, this is how, in between the bells, don't have to worry about transportation, have a captive audience. So it in that sense, the 5 minutes less a period has been well worth the investment.
Having Flash Forward has really helped this year, especially with, home life. I'm one of five, and all my siblings are like in ages of 5 and 8, so it's pretty stressful. Yeah, it's pretty hectic, and especially I'm a part-time caretaker for my grandparents, and sometimes I have to stay there nights to, give them their medication or stuff like that. So, and then I work. So this Flash Forward has helped, especially with the fact of getting the work done. And because I get home maybe sometimes like 11:30 at night, and I just feel like, I don't want to do this, I'll just do it tomorrow. And it's, showed teachers that, home life, we're not just a bunch of, teenagers that get home and we're just going to play video games.
Yeah,
on our phones or watch Netflix series, yeah. We have home lives and, sometimes we work or
responsibilities.
Yeah, of course. And I feel, Flash Forward is a great positive change.
Now kids that are doing really well, that's question four. What do you do for kids that already know it? Well, you extend them or enrich them. So we have classes, about 50% of our classes are intervention in this period, and the other 50 is extensions and enrichment. And then we got kids coding, and we have kids coming and doing extra jazz band practice.
Universally, from the staff perspective, Flash Forward has been widely embraced.
I really try my best to take advantage of it, because with all like the activities I do at school and after school, I'm able to like keep up everything and manage my time really well with it.
And what's fascinating or cool about this, as you say, is that this came from the teachers. They came and said, okay, we see a gap. And here's the gap. We need time within the day to do this.
Yeah, it's moving from like symptoms to causes.
Here's Dr. Jenny Wright, CCEE's assistant director in the Teaching, Learning, and Leading Center.
Instead of looking at the symptoms, symptoms are things like behavior, chronic absenteeism, suspensions. Well, what's the root cause of that? Those are all symptoms of something else. And like on that relationships piece in particular, I mean, ask anyone about who their favorite teacher was in high school, and it wasn't some great orator or deliverer of content. It was because of the relationship and the connection that they felt to that person because of the way they made them feel.
We're talking again about meaning here. She's describing what a teacher meant to you as a kid. Their meaning gave you a certain energy about them. You were excited to see them, to learn from them. Their meaning affected the course of your whole life. This superpower we have to change our systems and question our traditions to create new meaning within our schools. We, the school system, creates the form for meaning to unfold. This is what Keith is saying. We have high expectations, and we're going to create an intervention that shows you that we care about you and your ability to truly learn. And because we care about the life you have outside of school, we're going to figure out how to do it in the school day. Kids are at school like 40 hours a week. Fillmore is making it clear that if we ask ourselves good questions, we can find ways to help them within that time.
At my previous school, it was actually quite funny. 80% of our kids took at least one AP or IB class before they graduated from high school and got a C or higher in the class. We set a goal. I said, we're going to set a goal 100%, 100% goals. Well, that's insane, 100% goals. Well, it's kind of insane to say, well, I want my graduation rate to be 95%. Well, then I'm saying it's okay that 5% of the kids don't graduate. So that's silly. So let's set a goal. So I want 100% of the kids to graduate, before they graduate, to take at least one advanced placement course, college level course, and earn a C or higher. That's insane. That's insane, Keith. And I said, do you guys actually know what our number is? It's 80%. Everybody's like, whoa. I'm like, right, it's pretty damn cool, right? 80% of the kids. So we got 20% more. So we're starting to look at that here. And you open up enrollment to AP and honors and all these other classes. Any kid that wants to go in there, you can go in there. Why am I closing a door on you? We have an open door. We have, I think it's like 54% of our kids have taken at least one AP college level course or a dual enrolled course with the college. So we want to keep pushing that up. So when you open the doors and allow kids to walk through those doors and you have those high expectations with the support system, good things are going to happen. And usually the common refrain is, oh my God, now we're going to water down those courses because kids don't need to deserve to be in there. And lo and behold, everywhere I've ever been, actually grades go up. And they actually get better. And then the other stuff just goes away.
For a lot of kids, especially the older that they get, if you already think that of me, then I might as well be it. Because in their mind, nothing I do is going to make you change your perception of me. So if you think I'm a loser and I suck at math, then I might as well do it.
The system creating the meaning that defines the energy of the kids.
Let's kind of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Self-actuations at the top, and relationships and your basic needs, and then relationships, and you kind of move on up, right? So you got to fulfill all those things to get self-actualized. But just changing that mindset, right? Got to change that mindset.
Well, you have to realize that the systems we create unfold certain beliefs and behaviors. We slot into the systems that we surround ourselves with.
Kid here, I'm in a math class, math 2 class, And this kid walks in about 15 minutes late. Kid sits down right next to me. I'm in the back of the class. I'm like, he's not integrating into the class. He's not doing anything. So then the kids are off doing something in groups. So now the teacher's floating around. And so it's a perfect time to ask a question. I said, so are you going to like start doing the work? And he goes, nah. He goes, nah, I'm in football right now. But, you know, I'm hurt. And my teacher, Mr. Supkoff, he lets me chill in here and he helps me with my math during this period. It's not even his math class. I go, oh, I go, tell me more. And he goes, well, when I was in ninth grade, they put me in this, basically said, shitty remediation course. And he goes, so then I had to take math one as a sophomore and I'm only in math two as a junior, but I need to be in math three this year. And so I, you know, took summer class. I'm going in, I'm getting extra help because I want to go to college. And I'm like, damn. He goes, look, he goes, I'm doing my work. I go, looks like you can kind of slam this stuff. Can you explain? He goes, yeah, no, I was great at math. But for some reason, I was put in this shitty remediation course. I mean, why would a kid, you know, no agency, just that's what they put me in. Now, he got himself out of that on his own, but is that the system we want to put kids in? It kind of speaks to that, right? Like the kid even knew, like I was good at math.
Again, Fillmore Unified Superintendent Christine Shefferly.
One of our first steps was to identify common standards that are essential for each grade level that scaffold up to the next. That's brought clarity to expectations because as teachers, as humans, we tend to teach what we like, maybe what we're good at. And so those conversations started early on. Is let's get teachers in a room, let's huddle them together, let's revisit our standards, let's take a look at what kids need to know in first grade and what they need to know to be successful in second, and let's come up with some common skills.
More from Fillmore Middle School's eighth grade teacher, Ashley McLean.
I had a teacher who had been there for 45 years, and we had a brand new to our site, 2-3 years into their career teacher. And the new teacher, who's fresh out of school, has a really good understanding of the standards, was like, yeah, I can see why this is essential and this is essential. And our teacher who'd been there forever was like, but I really like teaching this. Why can't this be essential? And we all had to sit down together and say, we can really like something, but is it really the most important topics for us to be covering? And it was a hard conversation to have. Does that feed into what's going to happen in seventh grade? Does that feed into eighth grade? And then does that all work with what's going to be on the state test? Because science is a tested subject.
And it's been a year and a half of developing process, a common process throughout the district so that there are common practices, common language. Now there's reason to bring people together.
Throughout Rising from the Margins, we've primarily looked at elementary schools that have adopted the intensive assistance model. But in Fillmore, the program has gone district-wide. So this is our first opportunity to get a glimpse in how it unfolds through middle and high school. Once again, Keith Derrick, Fillmore High's principal.
Well, everything's just a little more difficult as you move up the chain, right? Because now you're taking six periods with six different teachers. And so you have disparate days and kids are, you know, without uniformity in the school, they're flipping between different classes. I have a teacher who does it this way and teacher grades this way. And so I got six of them and I'm navigating. So that it just kind of ramps up as you go. I think at the high school level, it actually brings clarity to the whole thing because now if we're writing common assessments, say there's four teachers that teach the same course. Well, now the student isn't getting four different experiences. I mean, the teaching, the instruction might be different, right? But the essential standards are the same. The common assessments that we're giving them are the same. So now you're kind of equalizing what the experience the student's getting. It's harder to do, right? Just because there's much more going on. But you kind of actually equalize it.
More from Fillmore High teacher and Guiding Coalition member Jeremy McMahon.
It shouldn't matter what teacher your kid has. It just should. Like, you know, I have Mr. Jones, Mr. Smith, Mrs., you know, Decker, whatever. All of them are teaching the same thing to all the students. Like, it shouldn't be a lottery, is what it comes down to. So if we all are working together, if we're all collaborating together, we are providing coherence in our structure and lessons. All of a sudden, you consciously are putting order on a system that arguably doesn't have a lot of order in it.
We don't want a system where I walk down the door and because a master schedule randomly puts kids between the two different teachers. We don't physically put you in with a teacher. So now by random selection, you have two different experiences. We got to mitigate that. And so how do you mitigate that? Well, I think with the clarity of the PLC process, now that you have essential standards that we guarantee every kid in this school gets in, say, in this example, biology. Doesn't matter if you're in teacher A or teacher B, we guarantee you're going to learn these essential standards.
Because we also have the data in the CFAs to prove it.
Right. And we're going to give common assessments and that are the same. And so now when the kid's going down the hallway, it equalizes more, right? Now you're going to get two different instructional strategies,
but they're talking too. So right. When it's not working for me, I'm adopting right. some of yours so because you're sharing with me. Right.
So that's part of the process. When you get to the good stuff of the PLC work, you've written all your CFAs and you've gotten all your essential standards. Now you're going, you and I are teaching bio together. And we just gave a quick assessment and 80% of your kids got it and only 30% of mine didn't. Now I say, hey, dude, like, what'd you do? Like, how'd you teach that? And now we're collaborating, but you have to have trust and safety to do that, right? But what tends to happen in education is I'm not a singleton, but I'm a singleton. There might be 8 algebra teachers, but I'm doing my own thing in my own algebra class.
But that unfolds from the system too, because right. we didn't give them the time to collaborate. Right. They're on split right. lunch schedule, so they barely see each other. And then right. it's like same thing. They have stuff outside right. of school.
Right. I got kids. I want to go home. My kids are playing sports. My kids are in band.
If I move counties because my dad gets a new job, if we were doing this everywhere, mm-hmm. when I move to a new school district, it doesn't matter where it is, what city it's in. We could start to equalize this across the board.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you really think about that, as an educator, do you really want to leave things up to chance for kids?
Fillmore is gaining a deeper understanding of what it takes to fundamentally change as a whole for the best interest of their entire student population. Not one school operating on their own island, but every school site. Every person in the district has a role to play and is a part of the process. And if you remember the watch metaphor from a prior episode, is a gear in the precision of making the watch work to tell time. Here's Dr. Jenny Wright again.
When the whole system is doing it, you're seeing this acceleration because there's a deeper understanding of the central office personnel to understand what's happening at the sites. When there's only one school doing it, it's almost like trying to run two different systems. Like we just talked about this yesterday, these schools are experiencing work. They've moved from what we call like that transactional improvement into transformational improvement. And you can hear it in the language that they use. The language that they use is much more grounded in transformational improvement. When you're trying to do that by yourself, and the people who are leading the system aren't speaking that same language, it's like running up against a wall. So in Fillmore, you're seeing the whole system is using that same language and is embarking on that same transformational journey all at once.
New meanings, unfolding new energies.
We're in the information age. The facts you can look up. You know, I at one point, I am loath to admit it, early in my career was that math teacher said, well, what if you don't have a calculator on a desert island? Like that was ever going to happen. We're at a point now where information is easily accessible all the time. If you don't have access to information, something much more critical is going on. So there's a shift happening in education, whether acknowledged or not, that we really, really need to teach how to evaluate, present, and analyze information more than they need the actual information.
That's why I say it's not about teaching, it's about learning, right? Because we focus on teaching, but we should be focusing on the learning, right? And like learning, we seem to focus on teaching. I teach, they should learn, which should be the opposite. Learn. How are we getting kids to learn, right? And grow. So let's stop looking at that. Let's start looking at the learning that's going on and the making adjustments. Yeah, kids will be happy to be here.
It's easy to just roll with it as a teacher. It's easy to just keep moving along. And like, I have this many days, I have this much time, and it's easy to keep going because you have so much you're trying to do. But when you have to stop and really think about, well, like this perfect example, we gave a CFA last year and we felt really good about it. It was on Rock Strata and we're like, these questions are going to be great. And then we got it back and every single student got this one question wrong. We taught that and we reread it and realized, oh, that was the question. So it wasn't a matter of looking at, well, what are we going to do if the students don't understand it? Well, in that case, it wasn't even the students didn't understand it. We wrote a bad question. Mm-hmm. So we right then and there, we changed it. Before it was like, oh, bummer, they all got it wrong, yeah. Right? That's unfortunate. Now, oh, this was written poorly. We did a bad job here. What are we going to do when they don't understand it? We're going to fix it.
What's Jim Collins say? Good is the enemy of great. So, we want to be great. Just keep getting better.
I look forward to coming to school and really love working with my team.
There's purpose. That is a purpose for the school. It's not just a purpose of, oh, we have a good relationship with one another. It's purpose of, how are we helping our kids?
And that's why that thread throughout all layers of a system, I feel is critical as a district might think about using learning communities, professional learning communities, to change outcomes. And it really is investing in staff, building up skill sets of staff, investing in culture, that's sustainable because programs and things that you purchase are not.
When you start having some foundational things in school, the rest kind of takes care of itself. I mean, you're still going to have some problems here or there, but it just, all that other stuff kind of melts away. Kids want to be at school. Chronic absenteeism goes down. Now that we have better relationships in schools and high expectations and support systems in place, suspensions start going down. Why am I going to fight at school if, you know, I'm in generally a happier person all day long, right? And people care about us. And if we're building those relationships, then maybe I'm not going to do what I wanted to do because I'm going to let somebody down, so I don't. So all that other stuff just kind of washes away.
We saw improvements in English language arts, mathematics, graduation rate. We saw chronic absenteeism decrease. We saw suspensions decrease. Again, not where we want to be, but we're moving in the right direction. And that's just a motivator. Talk about purpose and motivation and celebrations to know that we got our first distinguished school, but it's not our last.
It's a good look at education right now. I mean, I know a lot of schools, and you're doing this for a reason. A lot of schools are moving this way for a reason, because everybody's stopping and saying what we're doing isn't working or it's not making sense. And so it's time for a change.
When we listen to everything that's been said here, we should begin to realize how much we create meaning, how we have this superpower to define a person, a thing, a situation, or a system through the meaning we give them or it. We can see that meaning unfolds a certain kind of energy. If I'm trying to punish this kid, I'm going to have a certain kind of energy that I unfold toward him, a certain level of care, which in turn is unfolding meaning and energy in them about me. We're discussing the meaning of words and language that we use. Jenny said this is changing to transformational language. We spoke of remedial math. These words have meaning. They're symbols, and they affect how we approach our work and our relationships. What is the meaning of myself and who I believe that I am? Who we are is loaded with meaning, and it has a power over us that we rarely are aware of. I'm a migrant. I'm poor. I'm dumb. I'm ugly. I'm hopeless. What kind of energy does this unfold in my life? How do I find my passions? How does it begin to narrow what kind of opportunities I expose myself to? Narrow how much I choose to participate. And then this gets even bigger. What is the meaning of our systems? Systems that we create. Are we willing to question those meanings? Or do they feel so real and fixed that we just get angry with each other when we start to question whether parts of them still make sense? It's hard to question things that mean a lot to us. But have we ever really stopped to ask why something means so much to us? Maybe we'll find that it doesn't, or that it never really made much sense to begin with. I participate in this world, and each of us participate in the systems that we are a part of. If we as adults say, this is busted, and we're frustrated, and we go, I don't know how to fix this. Well, this is how we do it. We get together in healthy relationships and begin to ask better questions so that we can all identify our own deeply held meanings, our own thoughts and participation in creating and unfolding the meaning of our broader systems. And then we just keep getting together and asking those questions every single day, because the answers will be different tomorrow. Why? Because our knowledge has changed. Because today, we are new. And it's time to understand the new.
Some people came into the system because they were great students. Some people came into the system because the system absolutely did not work for them and they want to change it. But there's like that proverbial they. Nobody knows who they are and can name it. And it just feels like this concrete foundation that I don't have the power to unfold and dismantle and question. It just is. And so I'm confined to work within this system because it just is, rather than, hey, I have the power and the agency to start to question things and do things differently. And think about the what could be's and the what ifs, and have we thought abouts, and can we consider these? That's a very meta way of thinking about not just the education system, but most of the systems that exist in our reality. And I think people feel powerless and helpless to it because they don't know. They don't know that they can.
Thank you for listening. This series was brought to you by CCEE, the California Collaborative for Educational Excellence, whose mission is to help transform public education so that every student is left inspired and prepared to thrive as their best self in the world. If you would like to learn more about CCEE, log on to ccee-ca.org. Rising from the Margins was written and produced by Winsong Productions, with additional production support by Parsec Education. And stay tuned for our next episode. We'll be moving away for a bit on talking about the intensive assistance model, and we'll head to Bakersfield, California, to be learning about the Community Engagement Initiative. I left those interviews so excited about the possible future of our communities that I wanted to punch through the sky. I'm excited for you to hear those stories. That's next time on Rising from the Margins.